You got to have financial literacy in order to do that at a high level.
You don't know what you don't know. And most people don't know anything.
It's crazy.
About real estate or traditional investing. So if you don't take the time to just educate yourself on the basics, you're going to be staring at the ground counting pennies while dollars fly over your head.
What's going on, guys? Welcome into Money Moves. As always, your host, Matty A, my co-host, Mr. Ryan Breedwell.
What's
got
up, y'all?
Some great topics for you guys.
Tony?
Topics on all things stocks, real estate, and personal finance. We like to sprinkle in a little bit of news to spice things up. And there's a lot to cover today.
There is.
We're going to talk about some of the winners and losers of stock picks in Q1 and get Mr. Breedwell's take. We've got some real estate statistics on single family housing market and how hot and or maybe cooling it is. We've got some updates on market reports, FOMC rate decisions coming up. BlackRock is talking about getting into the crypto space, or at least pushing it a little bit more. We'll talk about that. We got unemployment updates, recession talk. There's a lot of stuff to dig into today. First and foremost, how you doing, brother?
Doing wonderful. Hopefully everybody had a wonderful Easter weekend. I had a great Easter weekend. I went and saw my niece, saw my sister.
I heard you were celebrating the Trans Day of Visibility.
I definitely went and looked up the picture of that, the shooter that got smoked by the cops. I don't know what her name was. Yeah. Aubrey Hale. That was the only visible transgender person I saw that day.
Holy shit.
That was a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, that was crazy that they put that
so
out.
Stupid.
And the timing. He tried to backtrack it, and then it was funny because
he literally said he didn't do it.
And it was like all over the White House.
And then
website.
The reporters asked, and they're like, he's like, I didn't do that.
Crazy.
That was stupid.
Did you also see Trump was in New York City this last week at the slain police officer?
I did see that.
That was killed on the streets there by an illegal immigrant that came in and already had a terribly dangerous background. And obviously, that's an example of terrible policy impacting the city, the community, the state, all that kind of stuff. And I forget what her name, Gretchen Hochul, or the governor of New York, showed up at the funeral.
Oh, and they kicked her out.
And the police officers were like, get her ass
I wish we could have heard, but I saw the guy like, pointing and she at least she left and didn't make a scene, but she shouldn't have shown up because I'm pretty sure she was aware that they did not want her there.
Yeah. And then when you think about policy, we talk about policy matters, right? It matters for your safety. It matters for your business. It matters for your wealth building.
Yep.
And obviously understanding how policy ripple effects out into our lives. When you talk about it being the result of somebody's death, and then to show up at a funeral service acting like you're in support of it, but then your policy and your actions are complete opposite of that. I was glad to see her have some public shaming and accountability to the bullshit that she's been pushing out in that state and impacting one of the greatest cities in our country by far, right? And when you think about how it's really starting to show on a massive scale. We're seeing it in California. We're seeing it in New York. We're seeing it in a lot of these blue states. You know, people are getting fed up with this stuff.
Yeah, I think it would. The bottom line is just that. People are pretty fed up with it. I think people are absolutely. Look at the response. Go on to social media and look at the response to the Transgender Day of Visibility. Very similar to mine. It's a bunch of bullshit. That is that. And it, for it, very poor timing. It's not on Easter. Just Easter fell on that day. But super poor timing. Why are we talking about something that's a very marginal mental illness that affects a very small percentage of people in the United States?
Yeah,
why are we talking about that?
It's less than 1% of the United States identifies.
It's less than that.
Yeah.
So we don't need to have... It's so shitty because all it is, it's vote baiting and pandering to the far left because that's their base now. That's what they have to do. And it's, man, I am so done with it. Super ready for November. I think that was the nail in the coffin for a lot of people. That pissed off anybody who was a moderate Democrat.
Anybody that's a Christian, a Catholic, that truly believes in the Bible and, mm-hmm. and the story of Jesus, to do that and to promote that on that day, very poor and tasteless. Yeah, and but when you think about it, Charlie Kirk made this post, and we'll digress off of this, but
sure.
he said, did you know that there are 145 days on the calendar celebrating LGBTQ?
It's ridiculous. And there's like how many?
145 days. And he goes on to list every single one of these days. And it is insane to see how much this is getting pushed into every aspect of our society, of education, of social media, of public holidays. Like, it's wild, right? Where is this for our veterans? Where is this
for
our servicemen and women that are out fighting fires and keeping our streets safe? Where is this for? You could go down the list of causes and or groups that have much larger pools of people in them
mm-hmm.
that there's not even a fraction of this kind of attention. So it's just very weird. It doesn't make sense.
It's just, but I'm so done with it, man.
People few more are months. Awake over woke. You've heard me say that over, and I think more and more people are waking up.
100%.
Speaking of somebody who wakes a lot of people up and has many very intriguing conversations on all sides, that is just absolutely dominating the airwaves. Joe Rogan's podcast has 14.5 million followers. That's nearly three times more than the next most followed program, which is TED Talks Daily. I think you can combine the top four and Joe Rogan is still beating them.
That is incredible.
That is insane.
Great show. Very good show. I like the fact that he's unabashedly himself mm-hmm. and he talks about whatever he wants to talk. Yeah, he's a very educated person.
Lots of discussions. Well-spoken. With very smart people. He looks at, with a level head, all sides, I think.
Yep.
And, you know, finds a middle ground in common sense. And is great at, and I think that's obviously a reflection of why so many people follow him on the right or the left,
mm-hmm.
is because he's got a bunch of people that are just coming to get some middle of the road discussions that can enlighten us.
Common sense based.
Yeah. I thought that was, man, amazing though to see, and just to show you how powerful building a personal brand is, an authentic brand, and how big of an opportunity that is going forward. If you're not putting out content, you're not sharing your thoughts, you're not leading from the front, now more than ever is an opportunity to take market share, to build connections, to create opportunity for yourself.
Agreed.
With the world that we live in. And Joe Rogan has paved the way for anybody that wants to follow that type of model. Breaking news today, renting is cheaper, now cheaper than owning a house in all of America's 50 biggest metros.
I think that's been a trend in it for, I didn't know it was all, but I know that for
breaking
a while.
It was like 35 states. Now it's 40. Now it's all of America's 50 biggest metro areas. It is now easier and cheaper to rent than own. The median sale price of a home in March was $375,000. That translates to a monthly mortgage payment of roughly about $2,700 bucks for a 30-year mortgage at a 6.74% interest rates. Home buyers need to make 12% more than a year ago to afford a typical home. This is per Redfin. And U.S. home prices are still 47% higher than they were in 2019, according to the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller National Home Price Index.
Yeah, that's a hard one to figure out because it's almost like when I buy cars, I either finance them or I purchase them. I don't ever lease them.
Yeah.
Because I'm still paying for somebody else's car
mm-hmm.
and then I have to give it back. And I have no value. So even if it was renting was $1,900 and buying a home was $2,500, most of my $2,500, probably $1,900 of it, is going to principal on my house that turns into equity that I can use in the future against. I don't know. You're always paying a mortgage somewhere. So you're either going to pay somebody else's mortgage that has a low interest rate, which is fine, or you can pay your mortgage and build something and do the harder thing and make sacrifices. I would argue the latter is probably the better choice.
Yeah.
Because interest rates probably, and I'm not a lender, interest rates are probably not going to be this high for very much longer. And really dating the rate is a great idea because if you can get into position as a buyer right now to negotiate an awesome price on something, maybe it's a more expensive payment for a few months. But when you refinance that, you're going to be A, used to budgeting that every month so you can just redirect those dollars to investments. And B, get yourself an asset in a rising market. My home value is going up. All of my neighbors' home values are going up. We're not as good as like Florida or some areas like that. But
some of those areas are actually cooling off.
They're still going up though. They're just not going up by as much.
Yeah,
so it's like you can get into an asset and maybe just parlay it in 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Hit your cap gains waiver. Get into that. Get into your dream home, but get somewhere where you can build some equity while you do it. Don't build equity for somebody else. That would be probably the most expensive mistake you can make.
And when you look at how many people have accumulated wealth through their home and it's their core source of wealth, right? It still should be a vehicle that people look at and go, it provides me shelter, but it's also providing me future value and an option to create wealth for myself.
Sure.
That you're just not going to have with the alternative.
Yeah. The being a lifetime renter is just really hard because what happens when rent goes up, you just have to pay it. You have no equity ownership in anything. Your money literally goes nowhere except to a landlord. So to me, it just makes sense to bite the bullet. And if you can afford it and it pencils out, mm-hmm. to take the higher payment, own the asset, and then refinance to a lower payment in the future.
Yeah. Inventory is up 0.9% week over week. It's up 26% year over year. It's still down 37% from the peak in 2019, but we are seeing more inventory hit the market. And there are still a significant amount of buyers in demand mm-hmm. in the market as well. According to John Gray, president of Blackstone, real estate prices are bottoming and there's a great opportunity to move fast and buy assets at beaten down prices.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't feel that, but at the end of the day,
I agree.
When you think about where values are going to go once we see rate cuts, how many people are going to come back into the market, and how many people are just waiting because of rates, but they're not taking into account the fact that there's not as much competition in right now. There's been some pullback in values. There's been some opportunity to negotiate, maybe some concessions and things that are probably not going to be out there when things heat back up again. The last 12 months have been the best time to buy a house if you were somebody that was truly thinking about investing in single family real estate.
Yeah, or even buying it for yourself. Because I mean, I remember looking at a chart past maybe 40 years of real estate prices, and I found like 7 years where real estate prices were down, and one of them was a 0%, which they counted as a negative year.
Yep.
So if you think about it, you're going to wait to get a lower rate, but pay more, but it's a more expensive asset now. So it almost probably is very close, if not penciling out, to where it would just make sense to do it now. So that's where real estate gets really tricky and it's big. It's the most expensive purchase you'll make in your life, most likely. And that's why it's a lot
of
people.
For most people it is.
Yeah, for most people. Which is why it's a little scary the first time you do it. I've bought 2 houses, so I know myself that I live in. And it was a big deal, especially with the day after my wedding. It was a big deal to get that house. It was a huge financial commitment. I remember right when our first payment started, it was fall of 2019, and then boom, COVID happened. So imagine how I was feeling. I was like, holy crap. But it was the best decision I ever made, because if I didn't buy that house then, I wouldn't have been able to sell it for almost $250,000 more than I bought it 2 years later, use the smidge of equity that I had gained from paying down my mortgage to use all that money for my new house. I have a huge, awesome backyard that was all paid for with the proceeds of the sale of my house, tax-free.
Yeah.
So that's what it allows me to do. If I wouldn't have taken the leap in 2019 and did something that was hard 5 years ago, I wouldn't have my house today. And so it put me from 2019, I was renting a $900 a month. I was in downtown Sacramento, and it literally like a box compared to what I had now. Moved to Carmichael, California, bought a $500,000 house, sold it for about $700,000, bought a new home for right under $1 million, and it's worth almost 1.6 now. But when I look at, was it hard? 100%. Was it worth it? 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't do anything different. It was against my dad told me not to buy the first house. And I went and I said, I'm going to make a big boy decision for myself. I feel like I can do this. And I did it. And then again, scary from going to a renter to a homeowner. But because I did that, I'm in a financial position today where I now can focus on other things in my life. I have my home doing its thing. I'm paying my mortgage. It's going up in value. And I have $700,000 or $800,000 right now of equity in my home for doing nothing except living there.
Yeah.
So it's a great option to continue to parlay up.
Exactly.
And then maybe when I retire, it's okay. Hey, I don't need all this house. And yep. I don't want to live, if I'm still in California, highly unlikely, I don't want to live in this state anymore. So I'm going to sell my $3 million asset and go downsize to something at $700,000, $800,000 in a more tax-friendly state. And oh, look at this. I get the majority of that money tax-free.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really big thing that a lot of people discount. And I think that that should be taken into account of why is it make sense to not be a renter when you can afford it.
I was going
to
say, at the end of the day, if you're somebody that is playing the wealth building game, you want to look at adding assets to your balance sheet. And one of the most proven vehicles and stable vehicles, especially if it's one that you're going to be living in and being intimate with when it comes to overseeing the condition, the management, the financials tied to that asset, it is going to be an investment that becomes worthwhile versus the alternative of not owning a home ever. Now, if you're renting somewhere and you're adding other assets to your portfolio, I can understand making an argument for that. This is more for the average individual that is not investing, buying and building a single family real estate portfolio or investing in syndication properties or doing what most investors are doing, which is adding assets to their balance sheet. Correct. They're taking the long, slow, usually the traditional vanilla route of putting a little bit of money into their 401k. They're trying to get little increases in their salary over time. And buying a house historically has been one way. And when you think about it, I forget what the statistic was. I just saw it. It was like historical amount of wealth in Americans' portfolio hits an all-time high of $146 trillion, or it was some crazy number. And when you look at the breakdown of that, a lot of it is people's homes.
Yep.
And so to not have that as a part of your wealth building portfolio or a chip that you can utilize and play the game with accordingly based on when you want to put that chip in play, like Ryan was talking about, having those options tied to a very key part of your life, which is shelter and where you live and where you're going to raise your family and where you're going to enjoy and create a lot of memories and experiences, that's something that you want to have control over, in my opinion.
I agree. And it comes with expenses. You got property tax. You got insurance. You should probably have an umbrella, especially if you have a pool. You got maintenance. You got all of these things that you pick up, but it's because you have equity ownership in the property. It's yours.
Yeah.
It's your baby. So I would encourage everybody, if you're on the fence, if this is for people that are, this is in my wheelhouse now, I'm not sure if I can rent, or excuse me, if I can buy, I'm scared to take that leap. I can afford the $700-$800 more a month, but it would lock me into that. Don't be afraid of it. Scared money don't make money. You have to take that leap and be comfortable with it. And I like to think about any time when I was growing up. First time I got my cell phone by myself, I'm paying that bill. That was a big deal back when I was in high school, really. Got my first car, got my second car payment, got my first house. Got my second house. All these things build up, but you've done it in other areas of your life. It's just a bigger number at a different time, and it's a larger commitment. Nothing to be scared of, though. It's the next step for your wealth building journey.
I think, too, getting into these arenas where you're challenged to learn financial skills and management is a net positive to the long-term financial wealth building plan that you're executing on. I saw this statistic, which I thought was crazy. 25% of Gen Zers say they'll need a therapist to deal with tax filing stress. Additionally, 54% of them said filing taxes has either already brought them to tears in the past or they are expecting it will this year.
Good God.
When you think about not being able to have enough gusto and chops to feel confident doing a basic skill set, which is how do I manage my money and how do I pay my money accordingly, right? You are going to be behind the wealth building eight ball forever. Versus if you can understand the responsibilities that come along with owning an asset or making money in a job or investing in a certain asset or property or stock, and how all of those workings tie together and play a role in the long-term goals that you have, which everybody, at least that I know, wants to make a little bit more money, wants to have a little bit more freedom, wants to have a little bit more impact.
Yep.
You got to have financial literacy in order to do that at a high level.
You don't know what you don't know. And most people don't know anything.
It's crazy.
About real estate or traditional investing. So if you don't take the time to just educate yourself on the basics, you're going to be staring at the ground counting pennies while dollars fly over your head. And that's the unfortunate reality for most people. They just do their 401k at work. They just buy their house. They don't explore what it might be to pick up, even if it's a rental every 2 years. Most people can budget for that.
Totally. You really can.
With regular income.
Yep.
You just have to budget for it. You have to say, I'm going to do this. So I'm going to be proactive in preparing for it. I'm going to earmark money for this.
Yeah.
But people just don't take initiative because they're scared because they're uneducated. Not from a lack of having the ability to get educated. Not taking the step forward because you're scared to be wrong. Or not taking the time out of your day,
yeah,
maybe your social life, to educate yourself on those things. And same in my world. Most people in there, I say, oh, you got a 401k. What are you invested in? I have no idea. $600,000, $800,000. No idea what it's in. $1.6 million. I don't know.
Yep.
And it just blows my mind because you should know that.
100%.
You should know your pro forma, you should know all your cogs on everything on your real estate. You should know what you're invested in, why you're invested in when you're investing in the traditional investments. All of that. And it almost always boils down to the individual.
Yeah, 100%. I did a presentation not too long ago, and one of the slides was the top 10 reasons people don't achieve financial freedom. And you just mentioned one of them, which is...
afraid of failure.
Yep. They don't believe that they can actually achieve their vision, so they never start.
I am the biggest fucking loser you guys have probably ever met that has somehow won. And I just don't get why that's so... I will say it for thousands of people to hear all over the United States. I have lost so much more than I've won. But the only things you can see is my wins. Mm. I use my losses to fail forward, to teach myself, to educate myself. And I hope that anybody listening to this that has had a failure, going through adversity. I know a lot of our real estate investors are having tougher than normal times right now. You have to buckle down and push through and be confident that this is the going through hell. Let's not stop for coffee and kisses. You have to keep pushing through to that. The night is darkest before the dawn mentality, because that's the only way you're going to make it. The pool gets smaller and smaller and smaller as you go up, because there's more and more people that are not willing to put the work in like you might be, that fall off. And you just keep pushing through, and you'll find levels that way that are... 10 years ago, I would never think I'd be where I'm at now. Income-wise, net worth-wise, business-wise, social life. 50,000 miles I flew last year. 50,000. I flew around the world almost twice. And I still ran a business. This is from somebody that in 2015 didn't know how to pay their taxes. Somebody going to be a financial advisor. You can do anything. You just got to put your mind to it.
There's 9 other reasons that I figure, since I'm on the slide, I'll share with you guys. One, because a lot of us have blind spots, and sometimes you forget that there's things that may be subconsciously or consciously showing up that are preventing you from moving some of these financial goals forward. Number one is most people don't have a clear vision of what they want their wealth to look like,
mm-hmm.
right? You got to have a target in order to create a plan.
Make a vision board if you have to.
They don't create a clear or realistic plan to execute on.
Non-quantifiable.
They don't build safety nets before starting, or what I call the swan effect. Like, what's the bare minimum you need to just put it away? It's stale money. What's there to give you that peace of mind, that sleep well at night, right? To be able to take some of those risks that you want to take.
Yep.
They quit and went safe when challenges arise.
Mm.
Man, you and I have talked about this. My first year and going out and taking risks and stuff, I was like, this is crazy, man. I thought about quitting and going and getting a quote-unquote safe job probably 6 or 7 times my first year.
Oh, I remember when we were talking about the hotels right when COVID started, and you were like, Jesus, man, this is...
Oh, I thought it was going bankrupt.
Yeah, and we both had to tell each other. I was like, dude, real estate's going to be good.
Keep
and you were
going.
Like, I think stock market's probably going to be good too. And sure enough, scared money does not make money. It makes people that pass money on to other people.
Yep. They don't run their lives or invest like a business.
That makes a lot of sense. And maybe we can elaborate on what does that mean to you?
To me, it means that you have frameworks and systems. You hear me talk about, I'm not the smartest, fastest, or strongest. I just have frameworks that are the metaphorical bumpers to my bowling lane of life, or my bowling lane of business, or my bowling lane of financials. And running my financials, running my personal life, running my business, I've got systems and frameworks that allow me to make sure that I'm knocking down strikes and spares, or at least hitting pins down, right? And I'm not bowling gutter balls all the time. And that's ultimately, the gutter balls are what kill people, and they end up having to completely start the game over, right? That is one way most people just don't ever get that traction, and they don't ever get to that next kind of milestone, or you talked about levels. It's because you have to have some real infrastructure to be able to scale. If you don't have a strong foundation, and everything is going to crumble on the sand, then of course you're not going to get to the second, third, fourth, fifth level, right? What does that mean to you?
To me, I think that's consistency. And I think in a good way to say it, I'll steal your word, is systems. Doing the same thing when the same metric comes up because it's the right way to do it.
Yeah.
And no matter what your emotion leads you to do, you do it no matter what. Almost blinders on.
Yeah.
For me, like, I have percentages of my income that I invest no matter what. It doesn't matter if I want to do something else. All that stuff has to be done first before I can get to the point. And it's all handling my business, preparing for anything that could go wrong, making sure that my house is in order. Now I have spending money. Mm-hmm. Now I have discretionary income. But the majority of my monthly income is invested. And it's just, I understand that I'm blessed and I have a higher income than a lot of people that we talk to and we're trying to motivate. But it's just percentages at this level. It's just how much of your income can you invest or put away in real estate, single family, commercial, in the stock market, into your insurance, into your syndications. Mm-hmm. How much can you put away? Because every dollar you invest in those areas is like a time capsule. We've said it before. It's literally putting your money to work so you can stop selling your time.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's just, it's uber important that people.
Yeah. And even I remember in the beginning, doing some of those things feels insignificant. You're like, oh man, $100 a month is going to make a freaking difference in my financial future. You do that for 10 years and you let the compound effect start to go to work. It actually, small things turn into big things. Unsexy things eventually can become sexy if you do them consistently and obsessively enough, right? Number 7 was, they try and keep up with the Joneses versus living below their means. This might be the number one thing that I think I've done better than most people that started where I started and are where I'm at, is I have not changed my lifestyle outside of some travel, outside of maybe going out to some nice dinners with you or friends and things like that. But in terms of still living in the same house, I didn't buy a new car until 13 years into my real estate investing journey. I haven't done a lot of things that there were people that were at the same points in the journey I was, and they were going over here and I'm like, oh, man, I want to go on that trip, man. I want to buy that thing. Dang, I want to do this or that, but I didn't. Mm-hmm. And now I'm further ahead of some of those people because of that reason. So not allowing somebody else's lifestyle creep into your investment plan and allow you to get swayed into making poor financial decisions may be, especially in the TikTok and Instagram world that we live in, the number one thing that I see plaguing most young people is trying to keep up with somebody else that really, if you were to pull back the curtain and look in their financials, look at their systems, look at the amount of money on, you know, in their accounts or on their balance sheet, you'd probably be pretty surprised. They're living rich, but they're not building wealth.
Yeah. Yep. I know a lot of people that would fit that metric.
Number 8 is, they never get good coaching or mentorship.
I'm a piece of shit for this one.
You have mine a good is
my dad.
Mentor.
Yeah, my dad. I have a chip on my shoulder for paying. I like to listen. I like to fail and figure it out.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think for a lot of people, they need good coaching, mm-hmm. good mentorship. They need that third party outside of themselves, because not everybody is as confident as you are in figuring it out, right? And some people need that validation. They need some support. They need affirmation that they're doing the right things. And I think that's definitely something to think about. Number 9 is, they fail to top grade their circle of influence and who they surround themselves with.
Mm, very important. Guilty by association is one of the most easy to follow universal principles. You will be who you surround yourself with.
100%. We don't have to speak on that. Nope. That's birds of a feather flock together. We've talked about that time and time again and probably heard it a million times in a million different ways. And it's true. That's the funny thing about it. And the last one is they don't invest and build passive income streams over time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people think they need to build passive income and multiple income streams right out of the gate. No. Get to a certain level of wealth, right? Make your core tree trunk, your focus, get those roots deep into the soil. And then you can start looking at all the different branches that can get off of that. But don't let this 7 or 8 or 11 that income streams for the average millionaire distract you from becoming masterful in the one cash flow machine that's going to fund all of the other opportunities.
Yep.
So that was the 10 things of main 10 main reasons why people don't achieve financial freedom. There's definitely some stuff that comes to mind for me. Maybe there's some stuff that comes to mind for you. I think if anything, what I've learned about the most successful, wealthy, abundant people is they're just aware. And hopefully this brings a little bit of awareness into maybe some of the blind spots in your world. Or sometimes you're already masterful and have unlocked a lot of things, but some of these things can creep back in too. I know a lot of wealthy people that have unlocked some pretty big net worth and cash flow goals. And then all of a sudden they're trying to keep up with the Joneses on that level. And all of a sudden that spirals out of control. So again, there's devils on every one of these levels, just being aware of what some of these things can do and how they can
brush your shoulder off there. You're just rapping.
Devils on these levels. Oh, I was like, I got a spider on my shoulder.
I was like, whoa.
Thought I had a bug on me. So as we shift back over here, let me get back to the agenda for today.
Data.
We see here the number of young adults still living with their parents is at historic levels due to unaffordable housing costs. It takes us all the way back to 1940, the end of the Great Depression, when it was similar to these types of dynamics. So interesting times, and I guess I'll lead it over to, we are seeing and hearing a lot of this data. Unaffordable housing, kids living with their parents, barely can make rent, savings accounts drained, credit cards at all-time high, debts at all-time high. And yet the market seems and feels pretty healthy.
Market's very healthy. A lot of those data points, I would tell you the worst kind of financial conditions that have happened since the Great Depression. So we'll take that off. It was actually in the 80s. So like 84, we had way worse financial conditions than we're in right now. 84, 86. I'm thinking of like charts that I've seen somewhere in the mid to late 80s, almost double what we have right now for unaffordability. Housing costs was more, assets were less, but you have to remember that was relative. People were making less money as well. So it is an interesting time. But again, I look at it from a point of whenever there's volatility, it's just opportunity to buy things on a discount. That's how I've trained my brain to think. Same in real estate. When this type of volatility at high interest rates, you may have somebody that needs to sell their house. They're contingent to sell to move. Mm-hmm. That's a great opportunity as a buyer to go into that seller and get a very aggressive offer accepted. So all this does to me is just create more pockets of opportunity for people to pounce on.
So recession talk has been floated around for the last
2 years.
I was going to say 2 to 3 years. Yeah,
not happening.
Per Axios, rich Americans are spending at healthy rates and remaining relatively strong, driving overall demand, but there are early signs that low and middle income consumers are starting to cut back.
100% true. The supporting factor of the economy is upper middle class and upper class spenders. This is why I've been so frustrated, is the data is not aligned with the reality, because if the economy is as strong as it is, which is what the data is saying and what the market is telling us, a consumer should be able to go buy a car. They can't.
Yeah.
They should be able to go on a vacation. They can't with kids. They should be able to splurge and buy a new home. They can't. They're locked into this. I was talking to somebody yesterday that was joking. I have a 2.79% interest rate and I literally can't afford to move anywhere. So I'm like, happy in my house, but I'm literally stuck here. Yeah. I could have moved somewhere and own even if I wanted to. Mm-hmm. I have to own this home. There's too many people that feel
like
that way.
Yeah.
And to me, this is where cuts This is why I still think the Fed has a good chance of cutting in June. Fingers crossed. Because I don't care if target rate's 2% and inflation is high. My guess is they're probably going to either fiddle with that and raise it, or they're going to say, we don't fucking care. We're getting close enough and we're going to cut. Because the consumer eventually is going to get so far behind that it's going to take too much to get them caught back up.
Yeah.
And this is where I'm saying, if they don't start cutting in June and they wait, the cuts they're going to have to do are going to be so aggressive and they're going to shock the market too much versus slowly letting the steam out, which is what I hope that they do. And that will slowly introduce money supply back into the market. It will go to people who can afford it first, and then they'll cut a little bit more money back in the market. Cut a little bit more money in the market. Now middle class people can spend better. That's what needs to happen, in my opinion, because those are the people that are getting squeezed. But the data says, oh no, the market's strong because we have job openings and unemployment's low. It doesn't translate to reality for middle income and lower income earners.
Yeah, the unemployment rate in 28 states, including three of the six most populous, were higher in February than a year earlier per Axios. The highest population state, California, now has the highest unemployment rate at 5.3%. Nevada, close behind at 5.2%. We're starting to hear some whispers that June is looking like the month for the first cut. We got a 36.5% chance of a pause, 61.6% chance of a 25 basis point cut. I forget what the
1.6 or 1.9% of a 50 not happening. 97% chance of a pause at the meeting in 4 weeks, 4 weeks from today.
Did you hear what said?
No, I didn't.
On Business Insider, he said that Fed officials should push back their timeline for rate cuts by a couple years. The underlying inflation rate that is consistent with economic well-being for now is somewhat higher than 2%, and we need much more time in order to get closer back to that.
Don't agree. I love Muhammad Ali.
I was interested shocked that he said that.
Yeah, Fed chair today, I can't remember.
Daly
said...
three rate cuts this year.
Yeah, that
is reasonable.
It's reasonable to have
a baseline too.
And he said June is probably still looking like when they're going to consider cutting rates. They will indicate that in the May, in my opinion, if they're going to do that. So Fed Chair Powell will speak and indicate that they're considering that. They have to just be careful. It's really threading a needle.
Yeah.
I posted on my X the other day, which is Twitter. That kind of sounds like I posted on my, but posted on my X account that the Fed has a daunting task ahead of them because we're no longer even in a hard landing or soft landing, in my opinion. You've heard me say a couple times a no landing scenario. That's where we're at. Because they're going to have to do things that are not in line with what the data is going to say to do and hope. I think there's a good chance that it does work. And money supply loosening is good, but we need to have a lot more homes available. I think home builders are in a good spot right now. We got 2 or 3 months to get some houses back on the market. I think there's going to be a flood of people putting their houses up for sale. That is inventory that's not here right now, which can't be accounted for. There's a couple things, but it's very interesting. Shout out to millennials for surviving 2 recessions, a pandemic, almost World War III, a trade war with China, Joe Biden. We've had a lot of stuff that we've had to go through in the past.
Yeah.
If you were born in the 90s...
No wonder people are so emotionally freaking strung out right now and crying about their taxes.
Yeah.
It's been a wild ride for a lot of people that are of younger generations.
Yep.
And they've also grown up in times where things were really easy. Just our generation, things were a lot easier than the generation before.
Yeah.
And vice versa, the generation before that.
Good.
And our grandparents, it was a lot...
We had it better than most, but we had to work for what we wanted. There were still good home values. The nuclear family was still very much. And today we can see that kind of being pushed against by the far left.
Listen to this. I think if this doesn't show you that, again, pendulums are swinging, education is one of them. How many liberal arts majors and individuals who've got that expensive piece of paper are working minimum wage jobs? And enrollment in liberal arts programs dropped 17% from 2018 to 2023 compared to computer and information sciences. enrollment has soared 34% since 2019.
It's great.
So I think it just shows people are going, I gotta get
awake is better than woke.
I gotta get something that's applicable to the world that I'm going to be living in.
100%.
Not make the world a place that people can live in with me, liberal arts. I'm gonna figure out how to be the next AI, do the next chip, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now, shifting over a little bit to the crypto space, and not just Bitcoin, we can talk a little bit about Bitcoin as well, but to talk about the tokenization of financial assets. CEO of BlackRock, Larry Fink, went on this week and said that the next step is the tokenization of all financial assets. That means every stock, every bond, everything. And that kind of created some ripple effects out into the news world, people against it, people for it. What were your thoughts on that?
It reminds me a lot when ETFs came out in the 90s, early 90s, when ETFs came out. Don't quote me on those dates. A lot of people said that because ETFs were like mutual funds where their baskets of securities were multiple people invest in, but they trade like a stock, unlike mutual funds, that it was going to crash the market. It was going to cause the next Great Depression, blah, 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 blah. Here we are today. The ETF marketplace has overtaken the mutual fund marketplace as the most popular place for investors in the United States to invest. I think a lot of that is going on with the tokenization. So let me tell you how I hear that and why that's not a big deal to me. When you go and look at your investment accounts, I'm 100% sure it's on a screen, unless you got a printout sent to you, which was a printout of what's on your screen. And all your assets are held in a digital ledger. So it's just an improved way to do what we're already doing. And likely we'll have lower fees, higher transparency, quicker transactions, lower transaction costs, and a more level playing field for individuals to grow their wealth. So to me, I don't see that as a big, if we implement blockchain similar to your Ethereums or your Bitcoin or open source, now everybody can see what everybody's doing. So that's even more fair. So I feel like that democratizes investments more and better because a lot more people have access to tokenized assets than they do investment accounts because they're just more familiar with how to set them up. You can go on your phone and create a Coinbase account and boom, you can start buying crypto. Some people don't understand how to buy stocks. Some people don't understand how to find a financial advisor.
Yep.
So it's a lot more accessible, and in places like South America or certain parts of Central America and Mexico, which are developing, it can be a way for them to participate in our market without having to have so much money. And so I also think that is very important. So those are all the things that tokenization, in my opinion, does. It allows more people to benefit from the same thing that people are already benefiting from. And we've already digitized our stock market back from when on the stock market floor, people were waving paper vouchers in the pit. That's gone. So this would just be the next step in the evolution of what it means to invest in the US stock market via probably the New York Stock Exchange and the CBOE.
Yeah. Now, speaking of crypto, and BlackRock says that Bitcoin returns are likely to come down now that it has been embraced by Wall Street. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. That to me makes sense because the adoption of it is more to speculate.
Yeah.
Versus the what some of the coins were built to do. Bitcoin, I think specifically to be a replacement for the US dollar or a store of value. They're just not. Clearly, we see volatility in the market. Gold's up. Oil's up. Bitcoin's down 5%+. Ethereum's down 5%+. Solana's down 6%+. Cardano. These are not stores of value in my opinion. They're places to speculate.
Yeah.
Because
of their spikes and dips.
Yeah. So I definitely think there's a world where Bitcoin price continues to go up, but with the effect of it also sharply coming down at some point because people are just going to boom bust it.
Yeah.
Meaning ride it up as high as they need to make a profit, sell it, and wait for it to get back down to an entry point that they want to go in and ride it back up again.
Yeah.
Similar to how gold is traded. The difference is gold has intrinsic value and is physical and is actually applicable in other things that give it more value, like electronics or the chips that we make semiconductors and AI processing on, they require gold. There's just all these things that make gold a completely different animal than Bitcoin. I know Bitcoin bros will go red in the face telling you why it's the best asset ever. But I just don't think that it meets the demands of Wall Street in the way that Wall Street wants it to. It's one of the slower ones. It's not secure anymore. It's been hacked multiple times. The FBI literally transferred $2.1 billion of Bitcoin from Silk Road to Coinbase today.
Yep.
I'll give you a hint.
The U.S. government sends over 30,170 Bitcoin worth $2+ billion to Coinbase using Silk Road hack funds.
Somebody did not just say, hey, FBI, what's your wallet code? Let me send you some Bitcoin. Those are seized assets. So it's not as safe as people make it out to be. Mm. It's not as democratized as people make it out to be. And you have to remember, like, some idiot put $20,000 into this when they were pennies and probably owns 4% of the Bitcoin market now. And you want that person pulling the strings?
Manipulating the
market. Yeah. So I don't see Bitcoin again as it anywhere except a place to speculate. I don't think that it will be what people think it or want it to be. And I think when that slowly starts to find out, that'll take some wind out of it and people will go to other projects. Maybe they'll go to Ripple. Maybe they'll go to Ethereum. I don't know. But they'll go to other places that are improved versions of Bitcoin. The biggest bear play on Bitcoin is it was the first, which sounds great, but normally the first is not the one that lasts the longest. Ford was one of the first motor companies. I would argue it's not the biggest motor company in the United States. Tesla is. So just because you're first to market doesn't mean you're going to be the biggest and baddest. It just means you were the first one to do it right. Somebody's going to take your idea, make it as good and improve it, and that's capitalism.
So let's wrap up with winners and losers from Q1. We've obviously been tracking a couple key stocks and companies, many of them which are in my portfolio, your portfolio. And let's start with the best performers, or maybe the best performer for Q1 of this year. Names that were in the headline news over and over again for a variety of reasons. And obviously the stock data supports some of the growth that these companies have had and the reasons why. What were the top one or two best performers of Q1 in the stock market?
Everybody's probably going to guess, but it's NVIDIA and Meta were some of the best large cap bellwether performers that we had in the U.S. stock market, both doing about 42.5% as a rate of return. Probably the only difference is NVIDIA pays about 16 cents per share. And since Meta announced that they're going to start paying a dividend, it's about 50 cents per share. So they pay a smidge more as a yield. So they probably slightly outperformed on total return. But annualized return quarterly, Meta and NVIDIA were both right on par. One of the worst performers.
The loser. Who was the loser of Q1?
Tesla. Yeah, they've been doing, for larger companies, again, I'm sure there's other stocks that are down more more, but for large, more recognizable names, Tesla's just having a really hard time. They missed their delivery orders again today. Cybertruck is out and about. I've seen a few of them around town.
My neighbor has one.
Nothing crazy. I think that people are really starting to take a look at the business and say, okay, there's all these new electric car companies. They're not innovating. They're mainly making Model Ys and Model 3s. China has a new car company that's probably going to take some market share from them. So I think it's a point in a lot of companies where you stop becoming a hyper growth or huge growth company and you become a large cap growth, but more of a value play. And that's what happened to Amazon, and that's what happened to Apple, and that's what happened to Google. Great opportunities to make money there, but it's normally on the back of some sort of innovation. So I think they're going to need to really dig down deep, find something new and interesting, which I'm very confident that they will.
Yep.
And that will probably be a catalyst to get their stock price moving back in the right direction.
There you have it, guys. The winners and losers of Q1. Hopefully you guys enjoyed today's show. We've got some great upcoming topics for you guys in next week's episode. More reports, more data, and of course, more opinions from Mr. Breedwell. As always, if you enjoy the show, all we ask, take 60 seconds, leave a review, share this with somebody that you know needs to be more a part of these types of conversations to help them on their wealth building and financial freedom journey. And you can do that by subscribing and listening in to the 3 episodes each and every week. Don't forget to check out MillionaireMindcast.com. We got a lot of great stuff, a lot of tools, a lot of resources for you guys in the store. And if you haven't reached out and said what up on social media, hit up R. Breedwell, hit up Official Matty A. We love connecting with you guys. So many awesome people that listen from all over the country, all over the world. And we wouldn't be able to continue doing this show without you guys. So with that being said, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. We'll see you guys next week.
Cheers, all.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode of Money Moves. Be sure to tune in next week for more news and updates. And if you got some value from today's show, all we ask is that you take 2 minutes and leave a review in iTunes, where by doing so, you're going to get entered into win a $100 gift card. Also, don't forget to take advantage of Ryan's free financial x-ray on your investment portfolio. And to do so, all you have to do is text the word x-ray to 844-447-1555. What we have found by offering this out is most people have no idea what they're being charged from a fee perspective, or really in most cases, overcharged, and whether or not their current investment and financial plan is actually aligned with what they're trying to accomplish. And this is something that Ryan and his amazing team do for all of our listeners for free. So be sure to take them up on that. Again, that's X-ray, one word, 844-447-1555. Also, if you're an accredited investor and you're not on my deals list, be sure to text the word deals to 844-447-1555 to be notified of the private investment offerings my team and I put out. And last, don't forget to check out all the amazing products and resources that we offer to our Millionaire Mindcast family at MillionaireMindcast.com. Whether that's one-on-one coaching with me, mastermind events, calculators, the Rich Life Planner for those looking to take their goal setting and productivity to the next level, we've got all kinds of great and valuable tools available at MillionaireMindcast.com. With that being said, that's all for this week. Until next week's episode, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers, my friends.